This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Talking Devils, the number one independent podcast out there on the internet. As you can see, there's just a magnificent duo today. Myself, Dave Murphy, as host, and I'm joined by United legend, former Manchester United and England international, Paul Parker. Paul, how was your weekend?
My weekend wasn't too bad. I was just trying to think, I was definitely at Fulham the weekend, so that took up a bit of my time. Going, getting there, watching the game, and then having to kind of then think about what, you know, that 90 odd minutes I watched, really, which it was tough. It was really tough, and bonus for a lot of the people, I should say the majority of people, was that they could walk away from the telly or turn the telly off, because it wasn't great viewing, and I was sitting there at pitch level.
Well, that's what we're going to jump right into straight away, Manchester United versus Fulham. For anyone that's watching live, get your comments in, get your questions in for myself and, more importantly, for Paul. For anyone that's watching this back, please give us a like, give us a subscribe. Any comments will be appreciated. So, Paul, Manchester United 1, Fulham 0. As you said, a pretty dire game for, you know, 89, 90 minutes. We can talk a little bit later on about his team selection and in particular one player, but I just want to get straight into the game itself. You know, I've seen from your social media post you were actually at the game. Ten Hag made a few changes. He brought in Garnacho. There's basically a back and forth with a lot of supporters where Garnacho should be starting or he shouldn't be starting. I'm under the impression that he should, to give him more game time so he can actually, you know, improve. But there was the argument that he maybe should be coming on at some point during the game rather than starting games. But I want to jump right into it. As I said, Manchester United 1, Fulham 0. You were at the game. What did you think?
It was just bland, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I saw Fulham were a little bit more excited, more productive when they got the ball and went forwards. Didn't really threaten the goal. Yes, Onana had made a few saves, but they definitely had that little bit more bounce about them. They played a lot sharper. It wasn't as complicated as what United were trying to do. And sometimes you have to go back to basics, really. And maybe that's what United should do: strip it down and start again. But there was definitely a little bit more about Fulham in that first half than what there was Manchester United. And it was a worry when labouring on the ball still. And every time when United did look good, it was when they moved the ball very, very quickly. They moved it quick and Fulham couldn't really deal with it. And I think anybody who is successful in any level of football, because you've got players who move the ball quick, they don't labour. You know, you look at back four players, you got the ball, you got time on the ball, no more than three touches. Even if you just make a quick pass to get it back, you've shifted people, you've moved them. That might allow the next person to make that pass through. Five, six touches on the ball, you're dragging everyone in, you're dragging them in. And just knocking a long ball out wide to space it looks good, but it doesn't really do a lot. And that's what was happening really in that first half. It was ponderous. It wasn't. There was nothing there. And it was dour, to be honest, really, Dave. And just by the general atmosphere, people sitting around me, I was in that old stand, the Stevenage stand, the Johnny Haynes stand now, the stand which I had to clean as a 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old, toilets and my bare hands, that ugly brown, whatever it is. Sorry, I'm getting a bit, it's getting to me. But anyway, I was in that stand and you're cramped. I mean, I'm moaning. At 5 foot seven, I'm moaning because virtually everything, but as people around me, they just looked in terrible shape. And everyone said, all everyone wants to do when it was just stand up. And there wasn't any chat about the game. There wasn't many opportunities. There wasn't anything. And if I just jump forward 45 minutes and just say, when the game finished, the easiest thing to come out and say, which is, I think, disrespectful to, I think, anyone related to Manchester United, and more importantly, the fans, and some fans would have said it, where would have kind of shrugged their shoulders and gone, a win is a win, which I think isn't good, Dave. I really don't think that's good if you're Manchester United. If you really are where, if you really believe in what the club's about and you play for the club or you play for the club or you're watching, Manchester United are better than that. A win is important, but a performance is there and thereabouts as well. It is about an important performance for your next game. Now, how do the fans feel about the game on Wednesday? How do they feel about that now? After that performance, how do they feel? And I'm quite sure they're feeling not 100%, because the man himself, Sir Alex, and I've said it many times, Dave, I must have said it when we've been on the radio together on this podcast together since you've come on regularly, is that Sir Alex believed in performances before big games, 100% before big games. You want something to take in that important game. Yes, it's only Copenhagen, but it's so important, 3 points. United haven't taken that game on as the way it should be, with confidence, because you can't take anything from that game against Fulham. That was just about getting 3 points and looking where these teams who are playing better and everyone's raving about them, but seeing that Manchester United are only a few points behind. So the margin is small in points, but when you talk about performances, it's massive. The game on Tuesday is something that really does need to be worked on, because that kind of performance in Copenhagen, I think there could be a different outcome, to be perfectly honest.
You talk about performance, which leads me on to our next question. We got, you know, absolutely tonked by Newcastle. We were bystanders in that game. Just before the Fulham game, you may or may not have seen it. I'm sure you've seen it on social media. The away fans, you know, pulled out a banner, "Play like you mean it." That kind of geared me up a bit. I'm thinking, okay, because a couple of the players had made reference to it after the game that they had seen it. To me, I thought I was going to get a reaction. You kind of deflated my question because you summed it all up there. We didn't get a reaction, did we? We really didn't get a reaction. It was bizarre, because if the players seen it, they certainly didn't take any heed of it. And did you see the banner? What did you think of it? Can you imagine, you know, can you imagine walking back into a dressing room under Alex Ferguson? And I really don't always like going back to the Fergie days, because it puts extra pressure on the manager. But can you imagine the reaction you would have got from the manager if a banner like that was unveiled before a game? Yeah. I mean, what did you think of the banner itself and what it meant? So,
well, I was in the stand and I was in there. I must have been in my seat, or I should say, in my seat, which I must have borrowed from Barbie and Ken. And I saw it, and I actually took a picture of it, because I could see it, but I took a picture and I brought the picture in. And I retook the picture, and I actually sent it to Wayne for Wayne to see it as well, because I've never ever seen anything like that. I think the last time I ever saw anything like that would have been in the early parts of Sir Alex Ferguson when he with Manchester United. I think there was a few of them up like that then. Now this one looked like the size of it. It looked like someone had nick someone's sheet from their from the cot and put it on there, because it wasn't the biggest sheet. It was too small. It was definitely too big to be a tea towel. But I think myself on a bed, that's got to be some poor baby must have been cold overnight. Because those people have travelled down in the morning to get there. But you know, for what you're saying, Dave, if I'd have been warming up and seeing that, it would have put me on edge. Because there's a few of them who didn't like what they were seeing. And that was, you know, while you're warming up. So that would have bothered me. That would have put me on edge to see something like that. It must have made a lot. It must have. If it didn't, they're either stone cold or they don't care. But that would bother me. And with Sir Alex in the dressing room, he would have noted that. And that would have been in his talk before we're going out, before kickoff. But he would have taken that upon himself, that is a reference to him as well. It wasn't just about the players. I mean, you're questioning the players, but he would have taken that personally himself. And that has been the worst thing, because all you'd done then as well is you would have poked the bear with the boss because you're not doing your job, and he's taking the brunt of it. You're taking the little bits off the side, but he's taking the brunt, and he's the one who would have been facing the consequences if everything fell apart after that. So it wasn't a good thing to see. Was it the kind of reaction that everyone would have expected to get? They expected the players to react to? No, not at all. I didn't really get it. It might have been glimpses. There wasn't any. I didn't see any snarling, anything of great note that made me think that they'd seen that and it bothered them. But again, I say it, we're in a different time. You know, the team is not carrying as many Brits, English people in there as well it has done over previous seasons. So there's a different mentality in there. And some players, I'm sure, when you look at the amount of play on there, you're talking about squad, you know, I've done maths and everything, what players involved in the game now on a match day is about, what, 17, 18 players. Involved. Did all of them take that on and on board? There have been a few of them who would just shrug their shoulders at it. Simple as that. And that's the way it works. It's not me trying to think of individuals. It's the law of averages. But not all of them in that squad who are warming up on that pitch thought, wow, we're going to deal with that. We can't have that to people talking about us like that. Behind your back hurts. You know what's going on. In your face hurts you more. You can't deal with, people say about criticism, oh, it doesn't bother me, I deal with it. Of course it bothers you. Criticism always bothers people. The main thing about when criticism is there is about how you deal with it. That is the thing, because it bothers you. It's a load of rubbish, it doesn't bother you. Of course it does, especially when it's hitting a nail on the head. And it did hit a nail on the head. It's quite easy, quite simple. First of all, you go and nick a blanket from a baby, and then in big capital letters all over the place, you put a message on there, big letters, at least a foot long for people to see. And they saw that. They absolutely saw that. It was, you know, I could see it sitting in the stand to the right of the away supporters. I could see it over that distance, that white, you know, that big white blanket. And, you know, and that's the way I think that's the way it's going to be. There's going to be someone else who has seen that. And then other people might go, you know, will go and do things until such time they see blood and guts.
That's the unfortunate part is that, and the most damning part of it is that we didn't get a reaction. We didn't get a reaction at all. Maybe it could have been argued that he didn't see it, but I do know after the game, one or two players made the comments that they did see it because one of the reporters asked them. And that concerns me a lot, that we didn't get a reaction, that we didn't get them going into the dressing room and saying, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. You know, when I seen the banner, I was thinking, OK, Fulham are not going to be happy about that. You know, they're going to see that, you know, this is the moment where Manchester United come out growling. We didn't come out growling. Patrick makes a comment, morning, gents. What's the performance symptomatic of a team low on confidence? That have been battered by everyone and frankly struggling to cope with the pressure of performing, which is sad reality. I kind of agree with that, but this has been going on all season, and we haven't had a reaction. That's the unfortunate part. And as Paul said, in his time at Manchester United, Fergie would have made that part of the actual team talk to go out there of, look, you know, these fans, they're behind you 100%, but you've got to give a performance. We didn't get that performance, but we did get the 3 points. It does paper over a lot of cracks. The winner coming from Bruno Fernandes. I mean, I'm doing an injustice to every player if I say that they didn't put in 100%, because for me, Pulisic coming on, it was down to his sheer hard work and just never giving up that created that goal for Bruno Fernandes. I personally feel he should be getting more time on the pitch. What was your thoughts on his cameo appearance and the Bruno Fernandes goal?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I think anyone who watched that 90 minutes then watched him come on a sub know that in that cameo, he'd done more in that cameo than what Anthony done in his time. I know it's an easy thing to say. Some people might say it's a throwaway statement, but it's a fact. It's an absolute fact. What he gained offensively was more. Was a lot more than what Anthony done. Not, I'm saying he was wonderful, he was this, and I'm not saying that, but what he done, it was simple. It was very, very simple what he done. And that's what I said at the top of all of this. It's about going back to basics. And that doesn't matter what team you are, all the great sides of yesteryear, when it was going through a bad time, I'm 100% sure those managers suddenly just talked about going back to basics. They said simplify things. Get that confidence back and just making simple passes. Don't try and win matches with one pass to get yourself, you know, straight away from the low end to the high end just with one. Don't try that. Make it short and keep it simple, repetitive, and build your way into it. And that's a life thing, isn't it? It's a life skill which everyone kind of relates to in any business, in any industry. At the moment in time, we're really not doing that. People are trying to do it on their own, to get the plaudits on their own and doing their own little bit. And he doesn't need that. And the one thing, and I'll say it again, I don't see anybody asking a little bit more from another player. That encouragement, the finger pointing without the face that's snarling, the finger pointing at somebody, let them know that they're not doing that little bit more, too many touches. Didn't have to try and beat that man. Could have played the simple pass, you know, and 2-3 touches in your own half, 2-3 touches in the middle of the park, one-on-one situation in the attacking third. Go and take the opportunity, one-on-one. That's when you go and express yourself. It's not happening, to be perfectly honest. Too many ways, especially in the first half, on my side as well with Anthony. Gave the ball away far too many times. Can't question his application after when he loses it, because he doesn't stand there and put his hands up and ask questions. He runs back. That's why, you know, you don't go all in on somebody because, you know, but he's trying back. But Anthony's, I think, is one of them players who's trying too hard, really, really trying too hard to do things. And he was up against Anthony Robinson. Not the he's always going to make a mistake, the lad, but he's competitive and he enjoyed that battle. He made it his point to carry on the nightmare that this lad's having. He goes, I'm going to make things even worse for him than what it's been already. And he done that to Anthony. He done it to him. He ruined it for him. And that's why Anthony got taken off, but he got taken off too late. You mentioned before, Dave, as well, just changing to the other side with Garnacho. I'm one of them, like a bit like you. I think he does need games, without a doubt, to try and get into it, to try and get, because I look at him and I can see why majority are saying he's better when he comes on a sub. And he's proven that. He's changed so many games. He did it at Fulham, didn't he? When he scored that goal. But in that last bit of the game, I think it may be just prior to it or just when Pulisic come on, he got better. He was getting into the box and he was pinning them down in the box. Now, is he another player that needs to help around his game? Look who you're up against. Are you going to beat that man for pace? No. Am I going to beat him if I get nearer the goal, moving him one against one because we're getting near the box and he's got to be really clever with his challenges? Because Garnacho is never going to really outpace many fullbacks. Because he's a good athlete, but he's not quick. His first 3 or 4 yards, well, he's not a Ryan Giggs, is he? He's changed of pace that quick. So his strength, as we've seen already, Dave, is that when he gets into that box, as we know, defenders don't want to go near to people who keep moving the ball. And that's where he got his joy in the end. He was able to get into the box. And that's where he got a little bit of joy. And it coincided with Pellistri coming on as well. So all of a sudden, United looked better when that substitution was made. And I don't know what happened prior to that. I can't think of a substitution. I wish I had my book in front of me. What happened in between that? But it changed a little bit. And it put Fulham on their back foot. Where did that goal come from? The goal come from the kerfuffle that happened just in front of the United fans. I don't know what Fulham were doing, but maybe somebody threw that sheet over one of the Fulham players' heads. I really don't know. And he just lost where, Paulini had lost where he was, and he just gave the ball back to his compatriot and said, go on, Bruno, have another go. But
there was something. It did ping around a lot. It was all over.
And when you're doing the radio or doing the TV, the last thing you want to say, it was like a ping pong machine, because that's the one that normally you have to put a fiver in the pot, because you don't want cliches like that used. or you don't ever say the way that game was, it's a chess match. You just don't want to say those kind of things, because it wasn't a chess match. No one was really thinking about it. But and there was that moment, then there was that little bit where they pinned them in, and it looked better. It looked a little bit like United chasing the game.
Yeah,
and there's still nothing better. I get it, because I was lucky enough to be involved in those games. You know, the 2-0 down against City, the Hillsborough with Sheffield Wednesday. You know, when we come back there, and that was we got that back to I can't think what it was, a 2-2 or something after being 2-0.
3-3 maybe.
Yeah, I think it finished 3-3. I think Chockey scored an incredible sloppy ugly goal in that game as well. But I can remember that when you're 1-0 down away from it, and you used to come out, and all of a sudden it just felt like somebody was just beating a drum. I mean, all of a sudden you just feel that drum was getting faster and faster. And that's how it used to be. And that's what it was like watching. Every time United went in at halftime, 1-0 down, 2-0 down, Tottenham away, if I remember rightly as well, you know, when they'd done it at White Hart Lane that time, when Tottenham went 2-0 up, and you're sitting there and you think to yourself, going to win this. Going to get back in the game. But it's not the same anymore. West Ham, Wayne Rooney as well, Upton Park. There's been so many games. People can name more, but I'm not getting that feeling anymore, Dave, that they can come back. And it's something, and it can't be about so much about the personnel, because the personnel, a lot of them have got good CVs, really good in what they do. So it needs something to give it a click. And I wonder that, The main change, people keep talking about players coming back. Players will come back. I'll be a difference when players coming back. There's only one player who will make a big, big difference when they come back. One player will just light that fuse, and he will add that difference when he comes back, because that one player is willing to let people know exactly what he feels about things. The problem is sometimes he wants to let the opponents know as well, which is a concern, but you don't want to take that away. And you know who I'm talking about, didn't you?
Martinez.
Yes, he's the only one. Now, if you're going to give somebody, I think, a captaincy, I think you'd give it to him, because I think it's not going to affect his game. It actually is a really good chance that would improve his game. Just on the other side of it, for him to suddenly just look at it, because he's a massive focal point. You look at him and you look at what he does, and you would just follow him. His example, you go, I've got to follow him. He's doing that. I've got to go with him to back him up for what he's going to go and try and do. Now, Roy made a big statement about Fernandes, and I'm with Roy. And I've said it quite a few times. I said it last when he took over. He's everything that a captain shouldn't be. The way he conducts himself. He did it at the weekend, and you think to yourself, if that was my boy doing that on a pitch on a Sunday morning, I would walk up to the manager and say, can you do me a big favour? Can you take him off?
Yeah.
Take my son off. And I've done that a few times with my boys. Walked up and said, would you mind just taking him off? Because he's been a bit petulant. Don't want it out there. Don't want to see that. And so and the way he behaves. And when you're away from home, the last thing you need is to rile up the fans. Everything's against you as a Manchester United player. The fans are desperate. The players are desperate to beat you. Go there and just first quieten the crowd. Don't go and do silly, childish things. And that's what he done. But the one thing that made it difficult for Roy, because there was no one there in his head, which is strange that Roy didn't have something to back up, because Roy has got an incredible memory from back then and still now. He's incredible what he holds in his head to let it out. That's why he's so good, because everything he can back it up normally. Yeah. But he never had anyone he could say, maybe because he wasn't in his head, because of haven't seen him for a while. But he needed, I think, someone to say. And I'm saying is, Martinez is your captain. Yeah. Everything about him, the fans respect him, the players, I don't know it like that, but they must respect him. Everything I say, you must respect him. I watched him play for Manchester United. I watched him play in Qatar for his country when he come on. And I watched him when he come on a sub, I think it was against Australia at that game. And what a performance when he come on. He made this unbelievable challenge on the right-hand side where he saw the danger, he smelt the danger, sensed the danger from a left wing back position, not wing back, a left of a three, and he went all the way across and made a challenge, 8 yards on the angle with a 6-yard box, bang, right foot, clean as you like, a proper 80s, 90s challenge. You could hear the ball, bang. The player wanted to scream. There's nothing wrong with the player, but he wanted to scream because he thought, must be a penalty, impacts too hard. The biggest concern, though, was the football. That was the biggest concern. But it was an incredible, and the man's incredible the way he plays. I love the way he defends. Everything he does about him, he's a bit overzealous, but you, as I said before, you don't take it away. For me, that's the one, because he's the one who would ask questions of his teammates. And I don't mean effing and jeffing at him. Well, you can do that, but it's still a constructive way of doing that, Dave, to be honest. And if you can't deal with that as a player, don't play the game.
Your captain has to lead by example, and if our captain, if his example is to consistently moan and complain and to bitch, basically, well, that's the example you don't want, because we do see it creeping into other players. Anthony's been accused of being a very similar player, is constantly complaining, and it's starting to creep into a few other players. I just want to get through a few of the comments here real quickly. Ben Allen says, well, Dave, glad you finally laid off that lad, Barton. unfortunately, we couldn't. The tribunal voted against myself and Paul, and Wayne will be back in the next week or two. He's currently on vacation. This is a very interesting one, though, because it kind of plays into what you were saying earlier on about you know, when you're Manchester United, everyone wants to beat you. Jermaine Jen Patrick says, interesting quote from Jermaine Jenis during TNT commentary. Everyone in the country is tuning in to watch Manchester United lose. I mean, we've had that for decades, right? I mean, everyone wants to see Manchester United lose. I'm under the impression that some supporters, the weekend is better when United lose versus their team winning. Because unfortunately, Paul, your team and your era and your manager ruined a lot of childhoods for a lot of these supporters now that are in their, you know, 40s and 50s. And so this is kind of just payback. It doesn't really bother me. It actually it shows how much Manchester United are still the biggest show in town, because what Jermaine Jenna said was true. People do tune in to watch Manchester United lose. I've got many Liverpool diehard supporters that I've grown up with. And they're able to keep me more informed of Manchester United than Manchester United social feed can. So we're still the biggest and the best around. There was a few other here. Johnny says that he agrees that Martinez is captain. Watching Bruno and his petulance is embarrassing. It wouldn't be a weekend, Paul, without talking about VAR. Manchester United, once again, along with a few other teams, and I'll get into that later. You were at the game, so you were probably a little bit baffled of you know, why it was called. But then if it's an offside, you kind of think, well, it's offside, it's offside. They put this down to what they call subjective offside. And from my understanding, it's the first time a referee has given an offside and actually gone to the screen. If VAR is supposed to be there for a clear and obvious error, how can you rule an offside subjective then? It just doesn't make any sense. You were at the game. I assume there was, like most games when you're at it live, there's confusion. Nobody really knows what's going on. But I assume you've forgive me if you haven't, but I'm assuming you've seen it since then. My opinion, absolute ridiculous call. If it was the other way around and Fulham had scored and it wasn't given as an offside, I wouldn't have had any complaints. I really wouldn't. What do you think of this new term, subjective offside, and VAR in particular? We will talk a little bit later about that, but just I want to concentrate on this one there at the moment. Harry Maguire deemed to have been in an offside position when the ball came across.
Well, it was. Harry Maguire was in an offside position, and why was he doing that? Go and stand in an offside position, but what you do is then you make yourself totally irrelevant when the ball comes in. I've seen teams do that. They do it for a reason, to affect the goalkeeper and to affect any defenders. But he shouldn't have got... If he doesn't try and get it, then I think there wouldn't have been a problem. Now, we always knew, and it was said when VAR was being talked about, whenever it started from, that it's going to be a struggle to work with football because football is so subjective. It's easy with cricket, easy with rugby, all those kind of sports would stop and start. But with football, it's very, very difficult. So I'm of the thinking, I look at it, I watch a lot of these, and obviously the main one we'll mention later.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But I look at the players, the reaction of the players who have conceded. And the reaction of the Fulham players was, sod it. That was it. That was it. That was the way their reaction, their hunched shoulders, looking around for someone to blame. All of a sudden, there's that gap. There's that little gap, and I can't see how big the gap is because I don't know how quick, you know, it's like that minute, that millimeter, whatever they call it, millionth of a second. All of a sudden, someone goes, as they do, Harry Maguire's, I've called Harry Maguire the new Tony Adams of football. Anything that goes past him, his arm goes up. But straight away, someone just goes, put my arm up. Hopefully, someone's going to look at it and call. That's what we're doing. And that's what we're doing now. Everyone's doing it. The moment anybody concedes, they're putting an arm up, hoping. And these people are falling into the trap. And was it? It's a goal. There's defense. Everyone would have accepted it, Dave, because we're talking minimal margin. And those words which we heard the moment this whole process kicked off, clear and obvious, as you mentioned, that's gone out the window. Yeah. Someone's got to 100% say, but that has gone away now. We chose the wrong words. This is it. So there is something about offside, isn't there? There's this new machine or something they've got now, but we don't use it for some reason.
Correct. It's used in the World Cup and the FA refused to use it.
Yeah, maybe because they refuse to use it because they've already given these people a lot of money to do it, so they've got to go through the process of how long this contract is. You know, that's what it boils down to. It boils down to people earning money, not because they believe in this one that it's better. It's because it's about friends of friends, as we know how life works. Because if they really wanted to improve the game and stop all this going on, they would do it tomorrow. Yeah. It'd be done tomorrow. We've got to bring that in. We're getting too many things going on now. We need that now, where there's no argument, where everyone would go, this is the rule. We saw it in the World Cup. That's the rule. That shows that, bang, go to bed. We're not going to, it can't be talked about anymore. But this one is causing problems, but friends are friends, and friends are going to go and do favours for friends. That's the reason why we are where we are with this one. So it's just the whole thing is something we're going to be talking about for a long, long time.
Johnny, I mean, this has been a comment that flies around. I think every supporter feels the same way, that this little goal is an absolute shame, I'll say. It's like they're finding any reason to punish United, definitely an agenda, even corruption. VAR was meant to approve bring clarity. It's done the opposite. I'm not a believer that there's any type of corruption here, or there's anything untoward against Manchester United. And Wayne hates me saying that. Hates me saying this. And I think these things are, swings and roundabouts. You get what you deserve, and over the whole season, it evens itself out. I'm starting to kind of disbelieve my own opinion on that, because since the Wolves game, it looks like every decision is going against Manchester United. Now, it's easy to get stuck in that rut and think that way. Liverpool fans, they could think the same with the game against Spurs, and all of a sudden now it's flipped and every decision they seem to get. Jurgen Klopp is consistently complaining on television. The question I have is, number one, do you think this is just mistakes, human errors? And secondly, which is the question I wanted to really ask before Johnny, brought this up, which is a very good question he's asking, about corruption and bias maybe towards it, one club or another. But do you think Eric Ten Hag should be more vocal in the media about the way Klopp and Pep is, or do you think it's like, what's the point?
I'm going to go with the latter, to be perfectly honest. Given how everything is with United at the moment, it's just like virtually you go and get involved in that, and people are just looking then to throw more at you, to throw more things at you. I personally wouldn't bother. I look at it now and I think about how can you give it a better chance to improve? I would say the people who are doing VAR do not referee games or assist in games in the Premier League. That's my way, because this swapping, from pitch to broom cupboard at Heathrow, and then flying to Saudi on a Thursday. I'd get special people do it every single week. We look at it, in most industries and business, you have specialists. Those specialists work on things which are really important, and the margins of making mistakes are minimal. But because they're human, something's going to happen. But they know how to sort it when things ain't going there. Other people step in and they work it. Just get people who do that, who know how to do it, and actually can work it quicker. It took two and a half minutes on Saturday. Must have been about 2.5 minutes that. After all that they've done, then they go and get the referee to go and have a look after all that. You're asking them, you're taking the decision away from the referee, but then because you can't, as this is what my interpretation, I could be wrong, but then you're asking him to go across, and then virtually he's heard you in his ear. So at the end of it, he wants it over and done with. By what you're saying in his ear, you could have swayed him over that time, because you're throwing so many things in his head. It's too much. And what happens when you hear too much. Turn left. And all of a sudden, oh, no. And you need something concrete. You need a positive mindset of where you're going. And then you might call him over. And then you're only telling him, we believe that, but I think the whole thing is wrong. Get specialist people who do not stand in the middle of games. They're not the number one referee. If there'd be people, you'd sit there and go, how many games is, say, five on Saturday, five on Sunday, or four on Sunday and one on Monday? And you turn around and say, you can spread that out over six people. Six, and that's all, and that's their job to stand there. That's their job. And if they want anything they want, they can go out and they can be assistant referees, but keep them away from the middle of the park. So they don't get involved with players personally. They don't have to go off and they don't have to send managers off. Let the fourth official do all that. You don't get these people who stand a chance of taking things personally, because we do know, by the way, Dave, that if you being human, doesn't matter if that person has done something and all of a sudden something comes along and you might just say to yourself, I remember you from last week.
It plays a part.
I'm saying it's not having a go at the referees. I'm saying which we in everyday life, that's what we do. And it must have happened to a referee. It definitely happens with players when someone does something in one game and the next game comes around. You remember that. Paul Scholes was always 100%. Good at things like that.
100%.
So that's my way. That's my bit. Anyway, you get on and you read the next bit.
Okay, unfortunately, I thought we were going to escape a long question from Mr. Barton, considering he's on the other side of the Atlantic, but we haven't. This is part one of seven. No, I'm just kidding. He said, morning, friends, from a jet lag. Why, and perhaps the petulance in certain people, Arteta included, comes in wanting to manipulate future decisions. The tide is too strong against United historically, which you just mentioned, Paul, for our players to win those battles. So they should just get on with it. Arteta upset because his team will be nowhere near City. And rather than look at the league and 115 charges, he blames the ref. We're upset because we're getting a bad rub from the refs and we'll likely miss out on Champions League by a small margin, but we have to get on with it. So I think Wayne's, you know, in a roundabout long way that Wayne does, he's agreeing with you. And that, as you said, you just get on with it. I mean, if we don't have the ability to change it, we just have to get on with it. So that moves me nicely along to, you know, our Champions League. We got a big one this week against Copenhagen. Galatasaray are away to Bayern Munich. A win in Copenhagen. I can't see Galatasaray getting anything out of Bayern. Puts us, you know, firmly into second place. I was coming into this all confident, and then you came along and brought me back down to earth and said, you need a big performance before a big game, and we didn't get that. Now I'm deeply concerned that we're not going to get anything in Copenhagen. I was hoping that, you know what, maybe we're starting to turn the tide. That old cliche, and you don't like using it, you play bad, but you win, can kickstart your season. I thought the kickstart was going to be against Brentford a few weeks ago. Then we got absolutely walloped by City and Newcastle. You know, we won a game which we shouldn't have won at the weekend. And then, like I said, you just reminded me that, you know, Fergie always came in with the attitude, we need a big performance before a big game. We didn't get that. Champions League this week, what's your thoughts? Should we be concerned? Copenhagen will be well up for it. They were unlucky to get beaten by us in the home leg at Old Trafford. Seemed to be a fairly decent side. The home crowd will be up for it. So what's your thoughts on Copenhagen?
Well, first of all, just my little bit about Sir Alex is that was his way of managing. And that's the way that we were kind of brought, you know, in my time there. That's how he was. That's how he focused it. Especially game on a Saturday leading up to a Champions League game, walk around on a Monday with a notepad, with his, you know, file there, and he's just walking around and all of us are scared to speak, scared to move, and, you know, walking on eggshells. And that's the way it was. Now, Ten Hag might be completely different. It might not be his way. He might not be trying to install that into the players, but we knew it. We knew that game before a Champions League game or a game against Leeds, Liverpool, we had to, you know, that game on the weekend was important. And then the Monday morning before playing, say, at Leeds or Liverpool in midweek, you know, if it was, that, you know, straight away, we've done great and getting a good performance at the weekend. But now he's preparing himself for that and he'd be moody. I don't know if Ten Hag's the same, but Copenhagen will be hard away, even harder because the team's not playing well, but even harder because of, can't pick out an individual who's going to maybe go and do something for you to go and win your game, get you over the line. So again, the one individual you can rely on maybe to make something happen or score a goal has to be Fernandes.
Yeah,
he's, when you look at it, and being perfectly honest, and I'm not his greatest fan as a person, you can see the quality he's got, but I can then, as I've said many times with Wayne, I can see the reasons why he hasn't been to a top club before, because there were things that people didn't like. And, you know, we're seeing that, but you can see he's got quality, he's wasted quality, his talent's been wasted over a number of seasons because he should have been playing for a top club many years ago with that ability. But he's the one player you believe who might make something happen, or he'll go and score a wonder goal or something, like we're talking Burnley away, something out of nothing at the weekend. But there's no one else, really. There's no one else. I look at, and I'm beginning to feel sorry for Hoyland. I shouldn't really. I don't want to feel. Shouldn't feel sorry for him. He's playing for the biggest club in the world. He's got, as far as he's concerned, he's doing the greatest job in the world. Centre forward for Manchester United. Everyone's loving him back home in Denmark. But I feel sorry for him because he's not being utilised in the right way. Yep. He's playing with too many selfish people. They're not rolling the ball into him. I was watching him, and he was having to slog.
There's a bit of sparky about him, isn't there?
Oh, there is, without a shadow. I think I said that at the weekend, Dave. But he was like a shy horse pulling a cart full of barrows of apples. The way he was going, he was there. He was everywhere. You could just see him. He was just going. Now, I want him to turn angry, because if he turns angry and he flexes, he could be seriously someone to contend with. But start demanding more from his players.
Exactly.
And that's what he needs to do. And there's nothing wrong in him doing that. If a player gets upset, as I say again, you don't want that player in the team. Soft. Start saying, give me the ball how you would like to accept the ball. Give it to me with the opportunity to be able to make my next pass. Think my next pass. And then if I don't deliver that, then you can talk to me. But there's two. One, because he's got that ability to make something happen out of nothing. And the other one, because you know you're going to get 100%. Now, when we're looking everywhere else, we've got a Scott McTominay who will run up and down and, you know, virtually make a trench through the middle of the pitch. You know that. But that's not the quality you're looking that's going to win you a Champions League, put you in contention to win a Premier League. And then you're looking at Wan-Bissaka. I think Wan-Bissaka has improved immensely, come back from quite a long injury, come back in, and I think he's been fantastic. His energy levels, he's still trying to find his feet. He's the better right back at Manchester United now. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. When you talk about that little bit of quality in the final third, Dalot's got that bit. When the goal we scored against, this goal we just scored recently, which got United out of jail. But Dello is prone to mistakes, doing the silly things, and you've got to go with someone who's more consistent, and that's Wan-Bissaka in his defending. Doesn't get beaten, improving going forward. I think it's I think when you look at it, there's three players I named there that you can rely on 100%. I'll go with Johnny Evans when he's playing all day long. Johnny Evans, 100%. All day long. One of those players you know you can turn to and he'll give you everything. And all your hope is that the rest of them will help out. And that's my opinion about the game in Copenhagen, because it's going to be fiery. They'll try and make it their best. Very, very toxic there to try to help their team get to the next stage of the Champions League, which will be a massive achievement for the club and obviously for the manager. But it's going to be the players being in a better frame of mind than what they were at the weekend. And let's hope the man with the baby blanket travels abroad, but brings a few mates who have got baby blankets as well.
You can make a larger one. You made a great point there about Hoyland, and maybe it's just because he's young and he's just come into the team and he's trying to show respect. But I never really thought of it till you said it, is that he needs to be demanding. He needs to be demanding more. He does so much running. But yet we have, you know, we got Marcus Rashford on the left, we got Anthony on the right, and they spend so much time trying to beat players. David Beckham rarely beat a player. His job was to get the ball and get it in the box. That's why we were so successful with Beckham and with the strikers that we bought. We brought in a striker, in my opinion, that is a cross between Sparky and Ruud van Nistelrooy. But yet here we are. He makes the runs, and 9 times out of 10, he just slows down his run, turns around and walks back because the ball was never delivered. That's why I feel that when he gets the ball, he's reluctant to give it up, because he's thinking, I need minutes on the pitch, I need the ball, and he's trying to be a battering ram. Patrick said for Copenhagen, is it best to get Bruno closer up the pitch to Hoyland? I feel when he plays deep in midfield, it becomes a hindrance and a nuisance tactically. I've been under that belief as well, that when Bruno sits back more, it kind of has the opposite effect at us. do you think, you know, because Bruno, he can pick a pass. I know he tries 200 of them and maybe only half of them come off, but at least he's trying. You think, you know, Bruno closer or higher up the pitch is a better option for us?
Patrick is 100% right. I said it the moment Hoyland was getting mentioned and I saw him play, I saw a few montages of him playing for playing for Atalanta. And he just makes those runs like Sparky used to make. Sparky weren't the quickest, but Sparky would virtually have someone close and he'd virtually pin them. And they couldn't get past him when he's running for the ball because he would be holding them. And he makes those kind of runs. Sparky made those runs early. And they're unselfish runs. So what he's doing is making that run. He's coming towards the ball, but he's bending to get the ball in between the fullback and the left side centre-half. That's where he makes a lot of his runs, going down that side. Even though his left side is stronger, he makes that run into that channel. And what he's virtually saying, just pull it to my right-hand side, and I will get onto it, and then I will then, if I can't get goal side and maybe go and score a goal or make a goal, I will come out, and then someone's going to be coming to join in, and then we're further up the park to play. But the problem is, every now and again, you've got to kind of give them a little bit of the cake and say, go on, make something good. That's what Sparky done. Try and make something good out of bad. They don't give him those opportunities because they won't play the pass. I've stayed away from it, and the only way I can actually put this right is by saying where the problem lies. The problem lies with Harry Maguire. Six, I was counting him. Every time the ball was given to him, he averaged, every time the ball's rolled back to him, his space around him, he averaged four touches on the ball. Four touches when the ball's given back to him, the space around. So he has those four touches. Always the outside does that. Keep doing that. Just little touches in front of him. Now, if he got the ball and he run out with a little bit of pace, five to 10 yards, a little bit of a burst, people go, hold on, they move. There's your pass.
Yeah.
He touches and touches. People stand still and he ends up trying to spoon one out to the left-hand side. Now, if he was to get the ball, first of all, look up and just go, see Hoyland making that run, put it into an area where he's going to finish his run.
Yeah.
And what happens then is, if that doesn't work, the next time he gets the ball, all of a sudden you'll see the centre-half and the full-back, you'll see the full-back tuck in, you'll see the centre-half drop off, and then he could maybe then play one through to Hoyland, to his feet, he might be out of turn. But he's not doing anything to create space. It's touch, touch, touch. And then when he makes the pass, honestly, he's created. He's gone. He's so much congestion around, and he does it, and people are saying to me, and I'm going, no, you're not getting it. They keep saying to me, oh, he's doing this now, he's doing that. He's heading balls. Everyone's going, and that's what they're talking about. When you look at what you want him to do, when Martinez is fit, control, bang, pass. Then he gets it back, because then when he gets it back, he's created space because he's passed it early. Instead of, if there's 30, 40 yards in front of Harry Maguire, he will start running into that space with no great purpose. And then he'll get there and then he'll stop and then he'll pass. And he hasn't achieved anything because he's ponderous. He can't pass while he's moving. Martinez does that. He does it on the move. Him and Varane do that on the move. That's why United were very, very successful in that period. When those two were together, Casemiro was there, Eriksen was there, because they created space to pass. Johnny Evans does it, to be fair to him, off his weaker side. Johnny Evans is doing it off his left side. Johnny Evans' left side is 100% better than Harry Maguire's. And he does it. Bang. Everything's quick. And I watched Johnny a few times, and Johnny was reluctant to give him the ball. He wanted to do something, and he's reluctant. Yeah. So the whole thing, the process at the back, affects the front. Because Hoyland then is coming closer. And what you end up with is a midfield, and you end up with the front player, Hoyland, there. Yeah. Nowhere to go. The wide players end up shallow because the team are squeezed up. So you've got nowhere to pass, and it ends up staying hopeful. So it's a problem because there's no urgency from the back. So
it goes back to your original point right at the very beginning of the show where you said that teams don't like to play against teams that move the ball, you know, fast. You've hit the nail on the head. Harry Maguire always receives the ball from the left or the right and takes two or three touches, and by that time the defense or the midfield is now closed in, the chance is gone. It brings us on to Paul saying the final point. What are your thoughts on Eric Ten Hag alluding that Maguire and Varane can no longer play as a pairing because of the passing angles? I think he sees both as right side. I think Paul summed that up perfectly as well earlier on by saying that, you know, we were most successful when we had Varane and Martinez together. For me, you know, God love Harry Maguire. He's a tryer, but it's just, and I do this thing with my son when we're watching the game. Every time we get the ball, I say, you know, I say at the television, at the game, I'm like, go on, give it to Maguire. You know you want it. You know you want it. You know you want it. And then the ball goes to Maguire, and then he tips around for three or four touches and then plays it on. I want to get into the final question. And before I do, I'm going to do a bit of a Wayne. It's going to be a long one. Well, longer than I would normally talk. Marcus Rashford was injured the weekend, so we're told. It's come out in the media that he went out on the, let's be honest, he went out on the rip after the Derby game, the Derby humiliation. And listen, I'm one of these people that are like, you know what, just because footballers are paid X amount of money doesn't mean that they can't be human, doesn't mean that they can't do all the things that we're allowed to do. Yes, it is slightly, and it's slight bit different in some sense. But I'm a firm believer in players should be allowed to enjoy their life. I really am. I think it's ridiculous the way some of the media and people react to when a footballer does X, Y, and Z. It's like, what's that difference than the guy that's, you know, working in a store, in a warehouse or whatever. But I do believe that his timing was wrong in the current climate to do what he did, considering the pressure that not only the club but his manager is under, and the scrutiny it was going to bring. I think he had a brain fart. No one's saying he can't enjoy his life, but there's a time and a place to be doing that. And if you win 3-0 against Man City, no one's going to say anything, and I assume that he's going to think that it's okay. If you just got walloped in Man City, your manager's under a lot of pressure. Opposition fans are singing you're getting sacked in the morning. It was an ill-timed decision by Marcus Rashford, in my opinion. Paul, as an ex-pro, what are your thoughts on Marcus Rashford and the timing of him going and partying right after getting walloped?
You know, personally, I have to be careful in case I make myself into a hypocrite, to be perfectly honest on that side of it, because I can't say I didn't go out after getting beaten. I suddenly started to realise the magnitude of football matches from when I went to Manchester United, to be perfectly honest. Because I always tell people that there's a big difference in playing in a London derby compared to playing in anything outside of London, because it's more than just a game.
Yeah.
You know, there's history behind a lot of these derbies, as I found out with the big games, I should say, not so much a derby, but the Liverpool game, the Leeds game, what things were that, the Manchester derby. I suddenly learned a new part about life in football. So what he done, I mean, you found out that this was pre-planned. He'd already booked it all out, all done already. But given that performance, given his performance, given how people were feeling prior to the game, given how people were feeling after the game, maybe he could have downsized what he wanted to do in the fact of where he was going and the number of people, and just gone somewhere with close friends and family to maybe a different kind of restaurant. Because there's nothing wrong going out for a meal and after a game, going. But I think the venue virtually was something that maybe got people upset. And like you're right in what you're saying, should never not be able to go out after losing a game of football, but it's the manner in which you go and do it, because you have to remember those people around and what it means to them, what they have to go, you know, and it makes it even harder for me to say that when there's no great explanation, no way out, because he's from Manchester. So he should definitely feel that a lot more than what I do in that sense. Yeah. So there's a lot of people out there backing him and saying, yes, they're 100% right. Yeah, he should. But it's just about where he went and everything that, and what's been going on prior to that.
Yeah.
You know, things might have been different this time last season if he'd have gone and done it and they got beat by Man City. He wouldn't even been given a mention. But it's about what's not been given by the team and him prior to the game and what was given during the game. And that's the bit that has offended a lot of people on that side of it. And again, I say it more so because he's a local boy.
Yeah. I just think that I think the timing was bad. It was, you know, us supporters, we take everything emotionally from games. You had said earlier on, and there's a lot of truth in this that, you know, and a lot of Scottish players like that, they just seem to feel it more, you know, in derby games and stuff like that. And we've lost a lot of that over the past 10, 15 years as more and more, you know, players from overseas come to England. And I really don't think they get a derby game. I really don't think they get what the FA Cup is all about. Some of them may, most of them don't. Marcus Rashford, born and bred in Manchester. My honest opinion is he should have known better. He really should have known better. Erik ten Hag, let's be honest, dropped him. The injury thing was just a smokescreen. It was the right decision. I'm not sure how Marcus Rashford reacts to this now because he hasn't reacted to much in the past since the season started. But I am hoping that we do see a reaction from Marcus Rashford. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up. I want to thank everyone for joining us. We got a lot of great questions. Wayne even piped in from Florida before he goes to see Mickey Mouse. So thanks for that, Wayne. Paul, as always, thank you for coming on. For everyone that was listening in, if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. Give us some comments on any of the digital platforms we're on. I won't be here next week. I am actually in sunny California for work, so I'm happy about that. I'm not sure we're going to have the show next week because Wayne is also going to be he's on the other side of the US in Florida. So we'll be back the week after that. If that's not the international break, but I'll have to look at my calendar. But Paul, as always, thanks for your time. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Cheers, Dave. Thank you.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.